Thank you. Hello and welcome all to our Kaiser Commission on Medicaid and the Uninsured web briefing, What Worked and What's Next, Strategies in Four States Leading ACA Enrollment Efforts. Thank you all so much for joining us today. My name is Samantha Artiga with the Kaiser Commission on Medicaid and the Uninsured. Today, we really look forward to sharing the findings from a new report we released last week that highlights the experiences and lessons learned from four states with leading ACA enrollment efforts, including Connecticut, Colorado, Kentucky, and Washington State. We're really thrilled that for our panelist discussion today, we have representatives from each state joining us, including Kevin Cunahan, CEO with Access Health CT in Connecticut, Lisa Lee, Deputy Commissioner with the Kentucky Department for Medicaid Services, Taylor Roddy, Marketing and Communications Manager at Connect for Health Colorado, and Rudy Vasquez, Managed Care Operations Director at CMAR Community Health Centers of Washington. I'm going to begin today's briefing by highlighting some key findings about what worked to achieve enrollment success across these states. And then we're going to turn to each of our panelists to share some of their perspectives on their current priorities looking ahead. We're then going to open the discussion up for a question and answer period. I will note that today's presentation will touch on the findings at a high level, so I would really encourage you to take a look at the full report that today's briefing is based on for lots more additional details and information beyond what we will be able to share today. And that report is available on our website at www.kfs.org. Before I jump into the key findings, I just want to go over a few housekeeping items. The first is that slides and a recording of this webinar will be made available after the event on our website at kff.org. And second is that we will hold our question and answer session after all panelists have provided their remarks, but you should feel free to submit questions as we proceed. We have a lot of folks listening in today, so we're going to be unlikely to get through all of them, but we're going to do our best to get through as many as possible. So now to get started, let's take a look at what worked to achieve enrollment success in these four states. So today's findings are based on the experiences in Connecticut, Colorado, Kentucky, and Washington State. Each of these states established a state-based marketplace, implemented the ACA's Medicaid expansion, and achieved success enrolling eligible people into both Medicaid and marketplace coverage. To learn about what worked in these states, in May, we went out to conduct interviews with a range of stakeholders in each state, including Medicaid and marketplace officials, enrollment assisters, consumer advocates, and providers. And I think one of the biggest things that we learned is it wasn't any single strategy, but really a combination of strategies across several domains, including marketing and branding, outreach and enrollment, consumer assistance, and systems and operations that were really key to these states' success. And underlying all of these strategies was strong leadership promoting coverage efforts. So next, I want to focus in on each of these areas a bit. Turning first to marketing and branding, one real key element of success for these states was that they branded the coverage expansions for both their marketplace and Medicaid coverage as state initiatives. And as a result, many consumers in these states really identified the coverage as a state approach rather than something specific with the Affordable Care Act or sometimes referred to as Obamacare. Moreover, they really invested in broad statewide marketing campaigns across diverse channels. And in some states' cases, particularly as I think Lisa Lee can tell you from Kentucky, consumer giveaways were really key for creating brand awareness. And Lisa can tell you about their famous Connect bags in Kentucky, which were really successful there for brand awareness. While broad marketing helped raise consumer awareness of coverage options, it was really direct outreach and enrollment efforts at the local community level that were key for helping to educate consumers and encouraging them to enroll in coverage. In all four of these states, extensive outreach was conducted through numerous local avenues. They basically used every avenue that was available to connect with consumers where they live, work, play, and pray. I think we also identified some really effective, innovative initiatives in some of the states. For example, in a couple of the states, they conducted outreach by traveling across the state in a branded RV, which allowed them to touch every area of the state with their messaging. Some of the states also established walk-in enrollment sites in heavily trafficked areas of communities. And in each of the states, they really used large community events, such as the state fair, to reach a significant number of consumers, and in some cases created their own enrollment events to reach large numbers of consumers. And this outreach and enrollment assistance was supported by a very strong network of consumer assistance in each state. And there are a few key elements that really stuck out about the consumer networks in these states. The first is that the marketplaces in these states really helped facilitate strong working relationships between insurance brokers and other enrollment assisters, and we heard that that was really key for supporting coverage efforts. Second, they all utilized a regional hub and spoke structure to organize the consumer assistance networks, which was really effective in helping to coordinate assistance activities and to facilitate the sharing of information back and forth between assisters and the marketplaces. Lastly, each of these marketplaces established really strong resources to support their assisters. For example, in Colorado, there were several marketplace staff that were dedicated specifically for helping assisters, and they were readily accessible to answer questions and provide assistance, particularly during those first few weeks of open enrollment when we heard from a number of assisters that they were basically ready and available at any time they needed them. I think it's also worth noting that in every state, we heard that demand for call center assistance far exceeded their original expectations, and they each increased their capacity as quickly as possible to try and meet those demands. And I think when we hear about what states are looking at, looking ahead, maybe they can speak to how they're planning to address those needs moving forward. The last area I want to focus on is on systems and operations. So I think we all know that a lot of enrollment success hinged upon having a functioning enrollment system, and each of these states fared relatively well in terms of the status of their systems at the outset of open enrollment. However, beyond that, they also employed a number of strategies to overcome system problems that they did encounter. For example, they each had data and feedback loops in place to help them quickly identify system problems and then deploy workarounds or make incremental fixes to address those problems as they were identified. On the operational side, one commonality across all the states is that there was very close coordination among key agencies, including Medicaid and marketplace staff, as well as the Department of Insurance, and they all engaged community stakeholders early and often throughout the planning and implementation process and responded to the feedback they received from those stakeholders. So we'll hear from our panelists some of the details of what they're really focused on looking ahead. In the report, we do identify a range of current and future priorities that really fall into three areas. The first is getting more people enrolled, continuing to improve those enrollment systems, and keeping people who have already enrolled covered. The second is really ensuring that there's adequate consumer assistance to support the next open enrollment period. And third, how to help newly insured consumers connect to care, especially recognizing that many of those who have gained coverage have limited experience with health insurance and need a lot of education to learn how to use it and access the care they need. But now I want to turn to each of our panelists to hear their perspectives on what their current areas of focus are. And as a reminder, we will be moving to the Q&A after we hear from the panelists, but feel free to submit your questions as we go. And we'll begin by hearing from Kevin Cunahan with Access Health CT in Connecticut. Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you, and thanks so much for having us all on and also for your report. I think it was a really helpful summary of last year for all of us. And, you know, it's funny, I've talked to, you know, our peers get together about, I guess, every couple of weeks for sort of a one big therapy session. And, you know, one of the things I think that feels in some respects is that given the challenges of this fall and the timing and such, my gut tells me we're going to look back at last year as the good old days. But with respect to current priorities for us, and I don't think we're any different than any other state, in addition to the ones that you've mentioned, system stabilization and enhancements are clearly one of our top three. We've recently put our system through a code review, which is essentially having an independent firm come in and audit our entire system to find any holes, bugs, patches, things that needed to be enhanced. We fixed 60% of the recommendations over the weekend, and the other 40% are going to be done before open enrollment. So our goal, like I'm sure everybody else's, is to make sure that that system remains as stable and workable and easy, as simple as possible for the enrollee. We're also heavily promoting this new mobile application that we introduced about 2 months ago, because we found, as we track enrollment, and we track it in real time, that and by device and a bunch of different segments of information, that after 7 o'clock at night, roughly 25% of our enrollment during last year's open enrollment came on through smartphones and tablets. It was about 9 to 12% during the day, but in the evenings it really kicked up. And the research showed that it was very much segmented by age. So, for example, it was largely dominated, 87%, by people under age 40. So we think a very good way to make sure that our enrollment is both retained and also enhanced among younger folks is to make sure that this mobile application works well. So we're very excited about that, and it's been available for downloading for free from iTunes now for a couple of weeks. It's also available on Android as well. The third on the system side is we're introducing an avatar that will pop up automatically around each time of the 14 most common questions that were asked during the open enrollment period. And so this avatar will pop up, restate the question, and give the most common answer for that question. So we've enhanced it also for adding specific responses around renewals. So we, like everybody else, I think, are looking for ways to, again, make this enrollment and renewal process as easy and simple as we can. Open enrollment is obviously just the number one priority for all of us. I think you did a really good job of touching on the key elements there, so I'm not gonna repeat those. I think you summarized those well. I do think that this is very complicated for our enrollees. We're expecting roughly a 35% churn off our enrollment. And however, with redeterminations coming from Medicaid, we're finding between 15 to 20% of them are actually being redetermined off of Medicaid and into QHP. So we think that's going to be a helpful means to replace some of that membership. Finally, we are working very hard to promote what our research is showing is the most effective form of marketing, which is word of mouth and colleague endorsement. We found when we queried people on eight types of marketing channels, whether they be from brokers, in-person assisters, earned media, unearned media, all that stuff, that the number one influencer for enrollees in our state was word of mouth references and recommendations by friends or colleagues. And the second was unearned media earned media from favorable press stories and things of that sort. We've developed a StoryCorps type of repository of favorable stories people have had with the ACA and with Access Health Connecticut that we position in the key areas of our state, because we know how important that type of objective communication can be.
Great. Thank you so much, Kevin. Sounds like some really great stuff in the works for the coming open enrollment period. Now we're going to turn to Lisa Lee, Deputy Commissioner, Kentucky Department of Medicaid Services, who can give us some perspective on what's on the top of her plate every day from her Medicaid perspective. Thanks, Lisa.
And thank you for the opportunity to allow me to spotlight some of the things Kentucky's doing. You already stole my thunder, though, by talking about our great bags we gave out during our outreach campaigns. Kentucky did have a very successful outreach campaign. We went across the state and spoke to individuals at an individual personal level. we had these great looking Connect bags that were very colorful, and we handed them out. And as we talked to individuals, we would say, do you have health insurance? And if they said yes, we would say, do you know someone who doesn't? So that got the conversation started, and we made so many great connections, and we're so successful in our enrollment efforts that we now have over 1.1 million individuals enrolled in Medicaid in the state of Kentucky, and our population is about 4 million. So that kind of gives you an idea of the number of individuals in our state who actually live at or below the poverty level. So our outreach was so great, bringing all these individuals in. What we want to do going forward is make sure that those individuals receive the health care needs that they require. And also, we want to continue to focus on the triple aim for our traditional Medicaid members as well as our expansion population. Of course, the components of the triple aim are better care for individuals, better health for populations, and financial stewardship. So we have this increase in members, so we need to make sure that we're fiscally responsible with all of their money to make sure that we can stretch our dollars as far as they need to go. So basically, we want to drive change in the health status of our members by using this massive amount of data that we have at our fingertips from our claims information. We mine our data, our claims information, on a routine, regular basis and look for trends. We look to see who's providing services, who's receiving services, how much is it costing to provide those services. And we're going to continue to do that going forward. And one particular area of interest for us is behavioral health and substance use treatment. Because just to give you a little bit of background, prior to January 1st of 2014, in Kentucky, treatment for substance use was limited to pregnant women and children under the age of 21. But beginning on January 1st of 2014, those services became part of our Medicaid benefit package. So monitoring these trends over time is of particular interest to us because here we're introducing a new population, you know, that's the childless adult expansion population, and we also have a new service, the behavioral health substance use services for that population. So we have very little historical information to forecast our expenditures and predict utilization trends. So in addition to that, prior to January 1st, treatment for these services was limited to very select few providers throughout the state. It was mainly our community mental health centers. So knowing that we were bringing on a more population and we were concerned about the behavioral health services and access, so we also opened up our provider network to allow providers who had previously not been allowed to enroll in Medicaid to enroll and bill directly. For example, we have enrolled licensed clinical social workers, licensed marriage and family therapists, and psychologists, just to name a few, to help increase access to the behavioral health services. So in addition to this, our Medicaid director, our medical director, meets with representatives, the medical directors from all five MCOs that operate in Kentucky. They go over information, they discuss areas of interest and what we may need to do to improve services. One example is our ER utilization. We looked at ER trends and we identified individuals that we thought were high utilizers. We worked with managed care organizations, and a lot of those individuals were assigned case managers to help them manage their health care needs, and it eventually ended up in reducing the ER in what we believe was inappropriate ER utilization before those case managers were brought on board. Another issue that we want to focus on in the state of Kentucky going forward is the use of psychotropic medications in children. Currently, Kentucky has one of the highest rates of psychotropic medication prescribed to children in the U.S., so we want to use data-driven interventions to reduce inappropriate prescribing for our children. Our pharmacy director is also involved in this, so we brought together the pharmacy directors and the medical directors from all the MCOs so that we can put our heads together and see what we can do to make a difference in for our children. And sometimes what it means is making a difference and change not only means educating our members, but in this case, it looks like it may mean providing education to providers as well. With the initiatives that we've been doing, we have been seeing improvement. For example, we show a 15.8% increase in dental visits from 2013 to 2014. We also show a 36.7% increase in preventive services from 2013 to 2014. So looking ahead, these are the sort of things we want to make. We want to increase preventive services, reduce inappropriate ER, and make sure that individuals in Medicaid know what services are available to them and how to access those services. So in conclusion, looking ahead, Kentucky's priority includes using data to drive change, continued collaboration with their managed care partners, and working to achieve better care for individuals, better health for populations, financial stewardship. And we believe that the steps we're taking will result in appropriate utilization of services and contain cost over the long run. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Lisa. It sounds like you guys are already making some real great strides in achieving some of those utilization gains that you're seeking. Now we're going to turn to Taylor Roddy, Marketing and Communications Manager at Connect for Health Colorado, to hear what's on her focus looking ahead.
Taylor? Thanks, Samantha. Yep, thanks, Samantha. It's a pleasure to speak with you and be with you all this morning. It's been really nice to hear about all of your experiences and how those really relate to what we did in Colorado. We've enrolled to date more than 141,000 Coloradans and counting in health insurance through Connect for Health Colorado. And while we celebrate that, we certainly know there's more we can do to improve our efforts in the next open enrollment period. So I'd say we're really focused on three priorities for next year. One is from a systems and application standpoint. We worked really hard last year, and we're fortunate to have a system that launched on time and worked 99% of the time for our customers. And this year, what we're focused on is really enhancing that system. Kevin mentioned building the avatars in, and what we heard from our stakeholders and our customers is that we needed more of that help text to really help aid the customers in that online experience and really help self-service them through the application process. So this year, we're focused on that system and building a single application system with our partners at the state. Second, I'd say what we're focused on is the data aspect and really mining the data and learning from what we did last year and how to refocus those for this year. Last year, we did a lot of targeted outbound communications using the data we had. This year, we'll continue to do that to our enrollees who have not yet enrolled. Last year, we sent over 500,000 emails and made over 100,000 calls to our account holders who had not yet enrolled, letting them know of those in-person events in their area by geographical zip code. We actually had people show up in droves to those in-person events with the actual emails printed out. So we saw that that was a really effective way to reach them. Using also that same data, we really want to expand our mobile and walk-in presence. One way we did that last year was with a branded RV. We drove that RV all across the state. We found it was a really effective way to not only show our commitment to the rural communities, but also to kind of build a face to the name and really have that one-on-one personal enrollment help. So this summer, I'm trying to polish up on my RV driving skills, so come the wintertime, we can continue to have that presence in the corners of the state that we had last year. And I think the last thing that we're focused on really is bringing the state together and convening in a pre-enrollment and rally kickoff event to really help build energy and momentum for our statewide efforts. You know, we know not only one group is really focused and responsible for enrolling Coloradans. It really takes the whole state to really bond together. So leading up to it, we have several focused training events with all of our stakeholders, with our brokers, with our assistance sites. And then following centrally, we will help coordinate statewide enrollment events with all of our partners across the state. Certainly the brokers and the assisters are doing events all throughout the summer, but I think what we really saw last year is bringing them together in the same walk-in site really helped our customers, and that was very powerful to have both of those very strong channels working together to help our customers get enrolled in a plan. So I guess to summarize, again, we're working on the systems, making the application process more smooth for our customers. We're working to build in kind of that educational text to really help people understand how they need to get enrolled. we're looking at data, as is everybody else. And then thirdly, we're really working to bring together all of our stakeholders in one committed, concerted effort to kick off this next open enrollment period.
Great. Thanks, Taylor. That sounds like that kickoff enrollment event will be great for getting the energy going. Now we're going to hear from Rudy Vasquez, Managed Care Operations Director at CMAR Community Health Centers of Washington, who will be able to give us some perspective as a provider and a sister on what his priorities are looking forward. Thanks, Rudy.
Thank you. I appreciate the time and the ability to share with all of you what we're doing. Early this summer, we really focused on going back to educate all of those folks that we enrolled earlier this year. We found quite a few of them, while we're in a hurry to enroll, really didn't understand what they were enrolling onto. And so we spent a lot of time just calling a lot of those that we've helped or assisted to make sure that they clearly understand how to navigate their health plan system or the provider system. Secondarily, we focused also early this summer on looking at special population groups where we're experiencing disparities, specifically around the Latino population, tribal groups, and African-American communities, and also the rural communities. We're monitoring what's going on in rural communities and what the impact is out there. Currently, we're really focused on solidifying our referral networks. What we did was, early on, we just assumed that this was 1 year of funding, and so we were going to maximize whatever we could to build an infrastructure for future work. So early on, all presentations and activities that we engaged in, we began identifying who our partners would be out in the community. And as you mentioned earlier, in the categories of work, play, pray, shop, and eat. And so early on, we started identifying at least a minimum of five organizations under each one of those categories that potentially could be a referral base for us in the future if funding decreased or if staffing decreased. And so that's currently what we're working at. We service eight counties, and so in each of the counties, we've identified at least 5 to 10, I've had staff identify 5 to 10 referral partners that we're maintaining relationships with who can redirect those in need to our sites for assistance. As Kevin mentioned earlier, word of mouth plays a big part, so we're now preparing to send out thank you notices to all those folks that we enrolled and reminding them that we're still here to assist them, and if they have any referral, family referrals, that they can send them to us, and we'll be happy to help them. We're currently re-engaging in larger events. As we get ready for Community Health Center Week in August and then back to school, we're seeing an increased demand by a lot of these organizations requesting more information and assistance at the events in preparation for the upcoming open enrollment time period. And finally, where we're really moving our entire structure is from moving from managed care to care management. We're looking at how we can, from the initial contact with the individual, make sure that they're linked to services at the completion of our work. And so currently in the system that we're developing, we're currently looking at enrolling the individual. If the individual, of course, the individual will be approved or not approved almost in real time. If they are approved and if they selected CMAR as their provider and we have they've selected their health plan, we'll go ahead and register within our database system and actually schedule them for their initial visit, either medical or dental. We're also, in the course of that enrollment process, if we identify that they're potentially a high-risk population group or they fall into the high-risk population group, we'll move over to a care manager. We'll schedule an appointment with a care manager who will assist them in ensuring that they get all the appropriate paperwork ready for the physician for their initial visit. But our whole paradigm is that we're going to be providing this soft case management. So from the initial contact with the individual, they remained a part of the caseload of managed care department until they've actually kept the first visit. if they no-show the first appointment, our navigators will actually be engaging in home visits to determine what impediments there are for that individual in regards to keeping that first initial appointment. Where they're not actually coming off of our caseload, per se, until they've actually kept that appointment. And part of that, we'll also be looking at ER utilization, those that are constantly using the ER, of how we redirect them back in, and that'll also be incorporated in our care management process. Right now, we're just gearing up and trying to get the framework in place, and hopefully that we anticipate that there will be a high demand. We seem to feel that, or at least experiencing that, a lot of folks are coming forward with a lot more questions, more so than they did last year, and are looking more prepared to enroll this year. And again, thank you very much for allowing us time to share with you, and look forward to questions.
Great. Wonderful to hear about all the continued improvements, building on the great success everyone already had during this previous open enrollment period in these states. So look forward to seeing what happens in the coming year. We're now going to shift to the question and answer period, and we have some questions lined up to go, but if you have additional questions that you want to add into the queue, feel free to ask those through the chat function on your screen. To get started, maybe can you talk a little bit about who still needs to be reached and enrolled in your states, and maybe how you know who those people are?
Well, this is Kevin from Connecticut. So we've got detailed data of the uninsured by zip code, and so we actually target the 10 communities and 43 zip codes in our state that result in about 73% of the uninsured.
Great. Any thoughts from the other states on how are you figuring out who to target this next time around and who they might be?
Yeah, hi, this is Lisa in Kentucky. I don't have the exact numbers, but we have mapped out our uninsured prior to the ACA and then after our outreach, and we'll continue to focus on those counties that appear to be, that have a high rate of uninsured. But we'll continue an aggressive outreach campaign across the state because it's something you just never can rest on. It's almost sometimes, like I said, in Kentucky we have 4 million people. Currently 1.1 million of those are enrolled in Medicaid. So it's almost like looking for a needle in a haystack at this point. But we will continue our aggressive outreach campaigns just to make sure that any new people moving into the state are aware of the programs and services that we offer.
Hi, this is Rudy from Washington State. One of the things that we came across with the Latino population specifically was that a lot of them were really confused, especially when you get into mixed immigrant families. And it became real challenging because early on they didn't get sufficient information. They got confused about the information they did get, and it allowed time for misinformation to take hold in their minds and to the point where they just weren't coming forward. So I know this is probably older than most of the folks listening in, but so we started kind of the Tupperware model, and we're inviting families to come together and bring their relatives and in large groups, about 20, 25, and we're working with the health plans who are helping us with this process to actually kind of hold focus group sessions as well as understanding where they're at, what they know, and then try to make sure that they have the accurate information and then try to get them to move on from that point forward. In addition, we're also recruiting them to help us bring more groups together for us.
Great. Hi, and this is Taylor from Colorado. I'll echo what everybody said is that we're focused on the communities that we know we didn't quite reach as well, and we have enrollment data that kind of compares the population to the enrollees that we know we have. So we can pretty easily see by filtering that data where we need to focus the next round. From a community standpoint, we know from uninsured data, just that from available reports that are public, that our Hispanic and Latino community is certainly underserved and that we are focused on partnering with community partners that have those relationships and really helping to build that in-person assistance and education. So when it comes to partnering with different communities, different media that have that special one-on-one relationship, that's what we're focused on right now to reach that population, as well as also reaching our small businesses in Colorado that we know definitely could be served well by the financial aid available to them and the choice that we offer in our marketplace.
Great, thanks. So there are a few questions that have come in related to service capacity to help address and meet the healthcare needs of those who have become newly enrolled in both Medicaid and the marketplace. So can you all speak to the extent to which there has been adequate capacity to meet that need on both the Medicaid and marketplace side? And specifically on the marketplace side, the extent to which or how you're ensuring that the networks are adequate to meet the needs and include all the specialties needed.
Hi, this is Lisa. I think in my presentation I talked a little bit about how we expanded our provider network, particularly for the behavioral health services. I can't speak to about our marketplace capacity. We did, prior to the expansion in Kentucky, we did a workforce development study to see where we lacked adequate provider networks. So that was one of the reasons that we used that data to identify those provider types that we wanted to enroll. Currently, we have had very little complaints or issues with individuals who have experienced access to care issues. We also allow our external quality review organization does a network adequacy for each managed care organization. So currently, we aren't hearing of any significant problems with access.
How about someone from the marketplace side? Any insights into how service capacity is meeting needs?
This is Kevin from Connecticut. We have a fairly, aggressive network adequacy standard. So the carriers need to have 85% of their most popular commercial network of primary care docs and specialists in our network for the standardized plans. We offer a combination of standardized and customized plans. So for the standardized plans, they have to have 85% of their most popular commercial network, and it's equally true on the formulary. So the formularies need to be, for the standardized plans, have to be the formularies of their most popular commercial plans.
Great. So combined with service capacity, ensuring folks can get the health care they need will depend in part on them understanding their health insurance and how to use it. And I think when we came out and conducted these interviews, we heard in all four of your states that health care and health insurance literacy was a big challenge that you were facing among your newly insured population. So can you speak to some efforts you may have underway to help educate consumers and really increase health insurance and healthcare literacy?
This is Taylor from Colorado. I can talk a little bit to that. You actually showed one of the pieces we've been using in our social channels. It's a jargon-busting campaign. So we simply take most of the glossary terms of insurance and try to break those down into digestible pieces that people will understand, and we have a campaign on our Facebook page and via Twitter as well that we do weekly on that. And then we supplement that as well with some examples online on our website of how that plays out as people are accessing their care. I can also say that this CMS recently put out a really good piece on coverage to care. So there's a series of videos. There's also a series of PDFs and roadmaps that we've leveraged in Colorado, both from the Connect for Health side, but also via our brokers and our health coverage guides, and really helping to promote that information to the customers. You know we need to help them access care and understand it, because we know that's how they're going to renew and find value in their health plan through us.
Great. Rudy, maybe any thoughts on what you're seeing in terms of what kind of help consumers need most to understand how to use their coverage?
I just same thing that everybody else is saying. Our state, the Health Benefits Exchange, is really looking into this. And we've noticed that early on that, you know, we knew that was going to be a challenge. There was just too many new words and things or concepts to try to absorb, and we had difficulty with it on our own. So we knew that our population group that we primarily serve would also. That's why we moved to these community groups, community talk sessions, just to see what resonated with them, you know, and to make sure that the concept was in there before we started giving them any information, because you can give all the information you want, but if the concept isn't there, they won't know where to store it or what to do with it. So a lot of it is going to be happening orally for us. We did find some visual pieces which were helpful, but even the visual pieces can get somewhat complex. Hopefully with a lot of education, and we're doing education constantly. I mean, for the moment, we meet with them, we're walking them through the process, we're checking to make sure they understand the next steps, if they have any questions. We have a 1-800 line if they can call, if they have questions pop up. We have an email address where they can write to us. So we're constantly on as those questions surface for them, because, you know, it varies from individual to individual. But we're hoping that in our community dialogues that we'll be able to get the appropriate phrasing that resonates with that population group that we're working with.
Great. So we're also having some questions now come in related to consumer assistance. So can a few of you maybe speak to what efforts are underway to help ensure and sustain the strong network of consumer assistance you had previously during this open enrollment period, and maybe what initiatives are underway to help strengthen that network, for example, maybe through training or other improvements? Taylor, can you maybe speak? Oh, go ahead, Kevin. Kevin, were you going to jump in?
No, it wasn't me.
Oh.
It was Rudy.
Oh, go ahead, Rudy.
Okay. Internally, we train most of our staff to be of assistance, and they're all sharing in various roles as far as educating the public about, or educating at least the consumers that are coming in. Historically, we've always had customer service reps at our medical sites. What's changing now is that we're using our navigators to be placed at our other sites, our behavioral health sites, our dental sites, and our ancillary service sites. And so what they're required to do is what I call a milk run. They are required to spend a certain amount of hours consistently at each one of those sites so that the public is aware that they can go at those specific locations for help. What we're finding with a lot of the consumers is they used to go to DSHS, the Department of Health Social Services, for renewal assistance and for other things. And, of course, in our state, they're not doing some of those things anymore. But they're wanting to have a physical location to go to on a regular basis that they know is going to be there. So that's why we've kind of tried to institutionalize some of those days and hours so that they know that on Monday afternoons from 12 to 5 at the dental building, there will be someone there to assist them.
Great. In terms of system upgrades, I think both Kevin and Taylor, as well as Lisa, you talked about continuing system improvements. Can you speak a little bit to what some of the key features were that really helped consumers with your systems during this last enrollment period? For example, maybe some of the shop-around features and how those were used, and what types of features you're really focused on adding to improve the consumer experience this time around?
Yeah, this is Lisa. I think the key features that assisted consumers in Kentucky, of course, was the ease and the, just the overall appearance. It's a very friendly site, and you didn't have to buy anything. Individuals could go in and put in a fake family if they wanted to that looked just like theirs. They didn't have to enter their name. They didn't have to enter anything until they actually wanted to enroll in, and search for a product. We had up front, we had just a little tool that individuals could go in and enter the number in their family and their household income, and it would say you will potentially be eligible for either Medicaid, CHIP, or a product on the exchange. So I think that that was very helpful for them to know right off the bat that they would qualify for something. And then going forward, of course, we're going to be focusing on just listening to our members and individuals who apply for benefits. If they have issues, we will make the site as friendly as we can, but it's pretty easy right now. But the biggest thing going forward for us, of course, right now we only have the MAGI population on the exchange. We have a joint application process with their exchange, so you can apply for Medicaid, CHIP, or a health product on there. So going forward, we'll upgrade that system to allow other individuals such as our age, blind, and disabled population to enroll online as well. Currently, they're not on our system.
And hi, this is Taylor from Colorado. I was just going to weigh in on a few things that you had asked, Samantha. I think some of the tools that worked well for us were the estimate drug and out-of-pocket costs. So people that were new to the system could get an idea of what type of drugs they are currently on and what they need going forward and possibly how much those would cost so they could buy the appropriate plan. We also had an estimate your tax credit tool that would quickly give you an estimate based on household and size and where you're located, what you might be eligible for, and I think that was important to at least pique curiosity that and let somebody know that they were eligible or could be eligible. And once they knew that, then that made the process much easier to apply. What we're looking to do, I think, is trying to find a better way to communicate the formularies and have those as a searchable function so people can understand which plans will cover their drugs and which will not. And so that's what we're focused on in the new system.
Great. So looking a little bit more broadly at what you anticipate with this coming open enrollment period, is there anything you anticipate will be different in terms of will it be harder, will it be easier, will there be different challenges than you faced the first time around? What are you expecting? Any thoughts there?
This is Taylor from Colorado. I can weigh in just real quickly. I think last time around, we were so heavily focused on acquiring new customers, and that was an intense focus for the 6 months of open enrollment and even beyond that. This year, I think certainly we need to focus on acquiring new customers to get more people back into the system, but we also have to take care of the customers we currently have. We all know it's easier to retain a customer than it is to acquire a customer. So that's where the educational portion comes in and really building those feedback loops and high levels of service in our customer service center and all of our touch points so we continue to retain our current base of customers.
Any other thoughts on what might be different this next time around and to the extent it might be harder or easier to reach people who are left out there? There have been a couple questions related to reaching people in rural areas. Can any of you speak to what has been effective for reaching folks in those communities in particular?
This is Lisa in Kentucky. We have 120 counties in our state, and I believe about 98 of those counties are considered rural. But it's actually the boots on the ground, going to all those little state fairs and connecting with individuals at in their home and in their communities. That's the biggest, I think, success for us, because that's the only way you're going to reach some of those individuals. And you may not reach an individual directly, but like I said, when we went to the fairs or we went to the little community festivals and we talked to individuals on the street and we asked them, do you have health insurance? If they said yes, but my daughter doesn't, but this one doesn't, we would give them information to take back so that it just started spreading pretty quickly word of mouth. But in those small rural communities, that's what you're going to have to do and just actually have somebody in that community that's going to be your champion.
And looking at current outreach and enrollment efforts, what kind of initiatives are underway to reach out to people who might be eligible for the special enrollment period and how to maybe help communicate that Medicaid enrollment remains open all year round?
This is Taylor in Colorado. I can help answer a few of those, at least from what we're doing. Close to the college graduation timeframes, as we know, people turning 26 can no longer be on their parents' plans. So we targeted some of the more non-traditional students at college graduation time and did a big outreach effort, both socially, online, and as well as on campuses. That was one of our focuses. And also in our social media campaign calendar, we have a weekly, if not two times a week, a mention of special circumstances. And at least just asking the question gets people thinking. For us, small businesses can also enroll all year around. So small businesses and that outreach effort is something that's continuous for us as well.
Great. Kevin, in your remarks, you had mentioned that you are expecting a significant rate of churn. Can you speak a little bit more to what that would be due to and any measures you're putting in place to try and address that?
Well, you know, I think that when you look at these the population with the income range that we're all serving, that it's not uncommon to see that income fluctuate. And that individuals within certain income ranges can fluctuate back between Medicaid eligibility and QHP eligibility. So I gave an example earlier of roughly 15 to 20% of the redebts from Medicaid being redebted off of Medicaid and going into QHP. And so you know, conversely, we're expecting a similar, if not higher percentage going into Medicaid. So I think that we're going to see, this is why I think we see ourselves so joined at the hip with Medicaid, because we're really serving a common population in many respects at that lower income range of QHP. So with respect to we can't change people's income, obviously, but we can do is to try to make the transition between the two programs as easy and simple as possible. We're not there yet. We actually have got a ways to go, but that's one of our core objectives.
As I mentioned in my remarks, I think one strategy we heard that was very successful in your states was developing close working relationships between the insurance brokers and other enrollment assisters. Taylor or Lisa, could you maybe speak to how you facilitated some of those connections between those individuals?
Yeah, hi, this is Lisa. We were very fortunate in Kentucky. All of our organizations pretty much fall under the same umbrella except for the Department of Insurance. But our executive director of the Kentucky Health Benefit Exchange is Carrie Banahan. Carrie actually served worked in the Department of Insurance, and she also served as a deputy commissioner in the Department for Medicaid Services. And when she was selected to head up the Office of Health Benefit or the Connect, our Health Benefit Exchange, she pulled resources from all of her previous jobs. And I really kind of think that her knowing all of those systems, insurance and Medicaid, and how everything worked was really a key to one of our successes, because we collaborated on everything. Medicaid would actually sit in the room with the staff from the exchange, and we would design the application and answer questions. And I think just choosing the right people and knowing that we're all in this for the same reason was one of our successes. I really have to give much of the credit to our secretary and Carrie Banahan, Secretary Audrey Haynes, naming Carrie Banahan as the executive director for the exchange was just the right selection because she had all of that background.
Taylor, any comments on how brokers and assisters work together in Colorado?
I would just echo what Lisa said. It really came down to the relationships. Our broker managers and our assistant network managers are very, very well tied in with their certified channels and have weekly touch points. So it really was just a call of sending out the event information and asking for help. And then also when once we got everybody in the same room, really talking about each of their experiences and what each could focus on. So when you're triaging people coming into a walk-in site, you as the triage person know exactly what broker can help with what situation or what health coverage guide can help as well, and then help facilitating that pass off between the two.
Kevin, can you speak to how creating your own state exchange facilitated your ability to coordinate Medicaid and QHP coverage and how that might have been different in another arrangement?
That's a good question. I haven't really thought about that. Yes, I'm kind of two minds of that whole thing anyway, just because I think that exchanges, because of the sustainability issue, they're not state agencies, and I think they have to be more entrepreneurial, more business-like than a typical state agency needs to be, or maybe even should be. And I think because of that, the DNA of the exchange versus a state agency has to be, by definition, has to be a little different. That's why the coordination, I think, as someone said, within Medicaid is just so critical. But I'm not necessarily sure that the what makes a good state agency necessarily makes a good exchange and vice versa.
So we just have time for maybe a couple more questions. I guess one question is I mentioned how having a functioning enrollment system was really key to success in these states, and we know that that did not occur in all states. Can maybe Kevin and Taylor, maybe you can speak to what allowed you to have a functioning enrollment system, and Lisa as well, in Kentucky, you all, I know, were up and running very well. So what really allowed you to get there and be operational during this open enrollment period?
This is Lisa. Lots and lots of testing prior to. I mean, we went through so many dry runs with their system. I mean, you just had to do that. And again, close working relationship between Connect and Medicaid and the technology folks.
Yeah, this is Kevin in Connecticut. I would agree with that. I know in our state, less is more was a clear mantra. We ended up scaling back 30% of our desired functionality in January of 2013, thinking that we were better off building a Ford Focus than a Maserati. And we also, to be frank, had to draw a line with some of the rules and regulations that kept changing. So I actually called federal officials on March 1st to say, with all due respect, any new laws, regs, NPRMs that you pass, we're not going to do. We can do in a year, but we have to, the goalposts can't keep getting moved. So we're saying as of March 1st that the goalposts are where they are. We're going to build to those goalposts, and with all due respect, if you change the goalposts, we're not moving our own. So I think it was focus. It was trying to be disciplined on doing fewer things consistently well, and that probably helped us at least.
Right. All right, and with that, we are just at our 2 o'clock hour, so out here on the East Coast. So I want to thank everyone for spending this past hour with us and hearing about the experiences in these four states, about what worked and what they're looking ahead to in the future. I would again encourage you to go take a look at the full report that's available on our website at kff.org. which has many more details beyond what we were able to cover today. If you need follow-up information or have questions, you have contact information here on this slide to reach our communications folks here at KFS. And you should also be able to connect in if you want to receive future information about upcoming events and web briefings. Thanks again. We hope this web briefing was useful and informative for your work, and we look forward to sharing more information with you again soon.